With the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, September 21st. We come to you coast to coast from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com. Also, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, shout out Bailey. All of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM, kids. If you don't know what that means, ask your parents. Apps like iHeart, TuneIn, everywhere you can get a signal in this fine world, you can hear my voice. I give thanks for that. Special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day. I'm going to be with you, filling in for Andrew Zarian, for the next 2 hours. Yes, it's a special 2 hour show. Why? There was a lot of wrestling happening yesterday. Hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. With WWE Wrestlepalooza kicking off the ESPN era domestically, and also AEW All Out happening internationally, but also providing us a works day worth of content. My goodness, what a day. But we survived it, and we're going to talk all about it. I have a lot of thoughts, as you might imagine, having a little bit of time to have things kind of soak in. I haven't listened to a lot of the scuttlebutt, actually zero, about it, other than for some people in the building. But I have some thoughts, including a complaint. A disservice was done, I think, to two performers on the AEW All Out card. I'll discuss that. What I liked from both shows, maybe what I didn't like. Thoughts for the future. Are we finally done with this head-to-head stuff? Can we be done with it? I think the business will be better off because of it. But we have a lot to talk about. Of course, Brock Lesnar returning, AJ Lee returning. We have a new WWE Hall of Famer coming. Was that the big surprise Triple H was talking about? And of course, lots and lots of news coming out from All Out. We're going to talk about all that for the next 2 hours here on Wrestling Observer Live. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. All right, back with you, Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday, September 21st. My name is Josh Nason, filling in for Andrew Zarian this week and next week, and we have a lot to get to. Let's get to it. So, I'm going to go all over the board with All Out and Wrestlepalooza. What a hybrid of wrestling yesterday. Started at 2 o'clock, if I'm not counting the pre-show for All Out, but started at 2 o'clock with their tailgate brawl and ended, I believe, like around 10-ish. Or so. So when Wrestlepalooza ended, so if you watch both shows in full, so it was 6 hours for All Out, and it was, 3 hours for, so 9 hours of wrestling, if I can do my basic math right. My daughter would be just shaking her head right now. Here's some of my big takeaways. I'm going to give you my three in this opening segment. The first one, and again, I haven't listened to Wrestling Observer Radio, any other type of, review shows, anything like that. I haven't taken it a lot because I like to kind of not have other opinions shape mine. When I laid my head down on my pillow last night, my first thought was, this is a note I took down during the match. I think AEW did a disservice to Hangman Page and Kyle Fletcher last night. If you don't know, of course, the main card started at 3:00. And they did an hour-long head-to-head with Wrestlepalooza that started at 7:00. The AEW pay-per-view concluding right at 8 o'clock. I think maybe 7:58 if you're super exact. But I was looking, as we're going through the show, I was like, okay, we got about 5 matches left. And there was about 2 hours if you were going to go at the 5 o'clock, or if you assumed they were going to end at 7:00. And we thought there might be some sort of overrun, but overruns are a little bit different when it comes to when you have to buy pay-per-view time. Where for more linear providers, like stream providers, I don't think they care because it really doesn't matter. But linear providers, you have to have like blocks of like hours, I guess. And once it became clear that, okay, there's 5 matches left in 2 hours, do you really think all these are going to get done? And as it went, I think right at some point, I tweeted, Tony Khan's going to go the whole hour, isn't he? He's going to go till 8 o'clock. It's not going to be a little overrun. It's going to be a full-blown. I'm like, these guys are going to go like 60 minutes. And what happened? They went to 8 o'clock. So that crossover hour featured, I believe it was the end of the tag team title, 4-way ladder match, and the whole reuniting of Jurassic Express. We'll chat about that later. But it had, for the vast majority of it, was Hangman Page against Kyle Fletcher for the AEW World title. And that was done for a reason. Obviously, the world title going on last is your main event. A show like that, which to me have a real clear main event, was the right thing to do. But, you know, I think it was sent as a message. We learned we knew that John Cena and Brock Lesnar were going to open up WrestlePalooza. You know, it's going to be some sort of crossover. It seemed like an indication, kind of back when, you know, Vince was doing the whole Attitude Era thing versus WCW with, you know, the making fun of, you know, the Nacho Man and the Huckster. They had the old people, we have the new. And I think that was kind of a clear message. However, coming at that point of the day, we had just sat through, 5 hours of AEW action, for the most part good. But there's still going to be a lag and a fatigue. And what felt more important in that case? We going into it, we knew Kyle Fletcher was not going to win the AEW World title. So that intrigue is taken out. Is it a possibility? Was that one of the reasons Chris Statlander won the AEW Women's title? We'll chat about that later. It could have been, but I think people went in knowing that was not going to be the case. It was meant to get Kyle Fletcher, seeing him, having him seen perceptions being a main event, which I think some people, if you're an AEW fan, you kind of already have, but he's there. You know, he's at that level now, if he hadn't been before. But I think what happened is you have this fatigue of just like, okay, how much time is left in the show? I've been sitting here for all these hours. Against a more interesting thing to me, which was what's happening with this Lesnar return and Cena, what's going on? And I think what I did is I put on the WWE PLE on my laptop while I had AEW on the big screen. And I actually muted the AEW pay-per-view because I kind of wanted to see what was going on in the WWE, assuming it wasn't going to go long, and it really didn't. And so my attention was taken away, and it's kind of, again, the point of a head-to-head battle is what grabs your attention. I'm keeping my eye on the AEW pay-per-view and the Fletcher Hangman match. As I'm going, I'm like, this is just, it's, I've seen so much great wrestling, I'm desensitized to it. Had an hour been taken out of the AEW show and had that aired at 6 o'clock, I think for me, it probably would have been received better. I'm sure there are other fans that probably think the same. Now this, again, I know the sickos hate hearing any criticism of AEW pay-per-views being so long. If you don't like it, don't watch it and whatever. But there is a reality. Everything has a shelf life. Everything has an expiration date. Everything, when it comes to entertainment, there are things that are just, they're too long. When you have the, I'm checking the phone factor, if you're watching a TV show or a movie, if you are just kind of squirming in your seat a little bit and that feeling just like, I just need to get up and walk around. And to me, I think AEW and Tony Khan, by doing that long, hour-long head-to-head, I think did a disservice to his two of his top guys in Hangman Page and Kyle Fletcher, who had a banger of a match, but it felt fatigued because we'd just seen so much stuff already. And I think this is something that WWE, it is, and of course, as I'm watching the Lesnar and Cena match, these two companies are so different. And we all knew this. We all know this, right? Yes, there are athletes in WWE. Yes, there are guys that can certainly go. We've seen that before. But it's just different. And it's been different for decades. And it's always going to be different. It's just a whole different thing. It does not feel like they're both wrestling, but they're both just, again, so much different. That was such a dichotomy there, just from fan reaction. Again, seeing the whole night, they had, what, five matches on WrestlePalooza. And again, all very long, lots of stories focused on intros, crowd reactions, characters, whereas you're just going match after match after match against All Out. That was my big takeaway, is that I think in the interest of showing, this is why we're different. We're going to showcase, we can give you this, they're going to give you this. And we're better, we're going to show you why head-to-head. However, it's not the availability of both. It's not like a TV head-to-head where people can just flip back and forth between channels. I guess you kind of could with streaming or have it up on two screens, but I'm not sure if it was the strategy going in of that. But we'll talk about more, I'm sure, in the days and weeks ahead. But I thought that was a big thing. I thought overall, I thought WWE was smart to open with Cena and Brock. I think they did their own disservice later on by Cody and Drew going last. Perhaps they knew that fans would be fatigued during the day. I'm interested from their perspective. Did they think that, or what percentage of their fans watching did they think were also going to watch the AEW show? Did they take that into consideration at all? I'm sure they did with putting, you know, Cena Brock first, but I'm also a little bit surprised they didn't put it last. But maybe they thought, again, that thinking people are going to be fatigued if they've watched everything all day. I don't know. Clearly, they have some sort of research or some sort of mindset into why are these shows shorter and what are we looking to accomplish with them. I personally like the shorter shows. They're more snackable, I guess, is a word I hate using, but I've heard it before. More, it allows you to think about stuff more and, again, to not get worn out by it. And you kind of spread things out during the week for your different shows and everything. As I'll talk about in the next segment, there are some things on All Out. You could have cut an hour out of it and still a great pay-per-view. But it's just this thing of just, we're going to go long as possible. And WWE does not do that. It's a big difference between the two. But I thought they did a big disservice to Cody and Drew McIntyre. Because at the end of that, after, again, the CM Punk, AJ Lee tag match, which to me, if you're putting Cena and Lesnar first, I think that should have gone last. I actually just talked about this Hangman Page. I'm going to contradict myself. I think in that case, there's a case putting the world title on a little bit sooner in the card. I want to get more into this in just a second. We have to go to a break. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, WrestlePalooza All Out Talk coming up next. 2 hour show. Keep with us. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, back for Sunday, September 21st. Let's keep the train rolling. With things I thought about WrestlePalooza and All Out, as I was getting to for the break, and I kind of compressed in there, again, it's kind of contradictory. I just say that in AEW, the Hangman Page match, it should have gone last because it was the main event. On the WWE side, I don't think the Cody McIntyre match should have gone last. But it's a different situation. Again, two different companies, two different approaches. What are the things that people are most excited to see? I would say that the Cena-Lesnar match and I think even probably more so the Punk and AJ Lee versus Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch match. One of the things that I've been surprised about, and is really, it kind of stuck out in me the last 2 weeks since Lee came back, is the generation gap between fans. And again, you kind of feel it, but I really haven't felt it. I'm 47, as I mentioned before. I've watching wrestling since, I believe, 87. So I've kind of like lived it and seen these different generations and so on. But I never really felt a gap until the reaction to AJ Lee. That was kind of at the end when her last match was in 2015 before last night. And that was when I was kind of starting to really check out of WWE. Wrestling just did not interest me at that level at that point. And I was really just kind of checked out of Vince McMahon's WWE at that point. So when her return came, and everyone went crazy, I was like, okay, it just didn't do much for me. I did not realize to a separate generation how big of a deal that was. Didn't appreciate it. I'm sure that's the case when older stars come back and younger fans like, who cares? Or I don't get why this is such a big deal. But it felt like a big deal to me. You know, I'm sure there's some people like that with CM Punk. When he came back in AEW, which did happen, that was like a big thing. It just felt like such a big moment. There's been other returns and all that. But with AJ Lee coming back, it didn't really hit. And seeing her last night, it still didn't hit for me. But that's because she's not my generation. But that's cool. And that's what people are there to see. I think that probably should have gone last. You could have put the Cena-Lesnar match last, but I think they wanted to end on a high point. And they want to end with your champion. Again, if they're approaching saying, we're going to get a lot of casual fans due to the ESPN audience, I can see them wanting to do Cody because your champion's last. So you don't want people to ask, why isn't your champion going on sooner? However, those same fans, if they are casual enough, are going to get confused why there's two world champions at some point anyway, right? So you might as well just do what's going to be best for them. But that Cena and McIntyre match just felt not lifeless because those guys worked hard. But again, at the end of a long day it just didn't have that same, yeah, that oomph. We got to see this. We got to know. We got to see what's going to happen here. And that's kind of what I felt with that. So yeah, I thought both companies did a little bit of a disservice, but again, it depends on how much they cared about each other. AEW clearly cared about WWE to the point that they wanted to cross over by an hour. And did WWE care that much about them in terms of, okay, we know you're probably going to do something, so we're going to put on our biggest thing to start with. But they didn't want to go too hard, or else they would have put Punk and AJ Lee's match first. That would have been not the coup de grace, but that would have been the big kind of like, we'll show you what we can do. There's just a little bit of hedging there. And boy, did people online, always online, not seem to like the way that Brock Lesnar-John Cena match went. I had a few searches up on my Twitter account, X account, yesterday. And I can tell you what the phrases were. One of them was, I was curious about the ESPN experience and if people were complaining a lot because of technical issues and all that. I saw some earlier, but I also don't know, not to say they're bots, but I also don't know if they're people just complaining to be complaining or if they're real life people. I don't know. But the three phrases I had up was WrestlePalooza ESPN, ESPN WWE issues, and AEW family friendly, which I'll talk about in a minute. There were definitely some people complaining about the $30 price, and boy, that came out a lot after that Lesnar and Cena match. People just did not like that. I saw some media people didn't like that either. The expectation was, I guess, that Cena was going to win a more competitive match, I guess. But no, Brock is, Cena's out. I mean, Cena's done in 2.5 months, 3.5 months. Brock Lesnar sticking around. And Brock Lesnar apparently is reunited with Paul Heyman. That was a big surprise. That was one of the, Triple H going into this. And you'll notice this. He says about SummerSlam too, expect surprises. And I think this is going to be a tagline of his for a lot because this is what wrestling is now. Both companies, all companies, indies, it's surprises. The action itself is not good enough. The storylines we have done for months and months and months or weeks and weeks are not good enough. There has to be, you're also going to get surprises here too. It is educating a different group of people that's, if it doesn't happen, you've seen a disappointing thing. If you haven't seen moments, it's a disappointing thing. That going out there and seeing competitive action is not just good enough unless there's major stakes, unless there's this or this. It puts a lot of pressure week in and week out. It also, again, starts to educate part of the audience that may be newer and not as hadn't watched wrestling as long, if this is what it is. And when you do that, that puts a lot of pressure on you to constantly be surprising people and teasing this, and then having people ask the question afterward, where was the surprises? So one of my takeaways from last night is, at least on WWE side, there was not a lot of surprises. There was not a lot of big news coming out of last night. What we did have was we had the new Women's World Champion, Stephanie Vaquer. Her era begins. And it seems like just yesterday she was at Forbidden Door competing against Mercedes Moné. And now she finds herself at the top of the world in WWE. Life comes at you fast, doesn't it? We had Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar essentially reuniting. Is he part of the Vision now? I guess we'll kind of see how that goes this week. Obviously, he's had issues with Seth Rollins in the past, but another big takeaway of mine last night, another kind of umbrella statement, the name of the game in wrestling, and it's been that way for, it's been growing this way for a while, but in terms of American wrestling, large factions and groups are the thing. It's the name of the game. The Death Riders and AEW keep adding. The Don Callis family keeps adding. Paul Heyman's Vision Group keeps adding. Alliances and these giant groups are the name of the game because it gives that, adding new titles, tournaments and such, it is a way now in today's wrestling world to, in terms of major TV wrestling, is a way, they're booking crutches in so many ways because you have these giant rosters. Like, what are we supposed to do with all these people? We don't want to lose them. We don't want to give them away to someone else, but we need something for them to do. We'll put them in a faction. We'll put them in a group. We'll have them compete for a secondary title, maybe a thirdly title. Thirdly? Does that make sense? Anyway, you know what I mean? Tournaments, you know, like there's so many of these things, but large factions and groups, because we, the underlying thing is we need something for them to do. And that does kind of take away from at least how I grew up on and so on, where you manage the roster that you had and allowed you, it felt a little bit more kind of special when people kind of get moved up or things like that. Now it's just so much different. So much different. So yeah, we'll see if Brock joins this vision group. And that I think could be interesting. WWE really hasn't gone like super faction crazy to the point that AEW has. I assume it's the New Japan influence there, but it could. It very well could. They have Judgment Day. They have some groups, but it looks like Lesnar. We'll see how that plays, I'm sure, this week. Of course, the other big news, other big surprise, this was one. There wasn't a ton of news coming out of the show, as I mentioned. Undertaker surprising Stephanie McMahon with her induction in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, Stephanie was sitting at ringside with, Nick Khan and his kids. And I don't know who she was with, but Undertaker comes out doing the American Badass gimmick and all that, and does this really weird, awkward kind of microphone promo with Stephanie, and she acts like she has no idea what is going on. I don't think that she did. It's possible, but I don't think she did. And he comes out and makes some jokes and all that stuff. And I put it on our Slack channel. The minute he came out and started talking, they're really featuring a lot on Stephanie. The shots over the shoulder shot. And it was just kind of like, oh, something's going to happen between these two. Undertaker's not involved in any angles or anything like that. Neither is Stephanie. So I said, okay, what's going on here? And I put in our Slack check, like, she's going to the Hall of Fame, isn't she? And lo and behold, 2 minutes later, he told her she was going into the Hall of Fame. So there you go. It's a WWE Hall of Fame, smiles on faces and so on. I mean, sure, why not? She was a major performer during the Ruthless Aggression era, I guess, in the Attitude era as well. I mean, she's been around forever. The wife of Stephanie, wife of Triple H. So clearly there, but she's is she going to be the headliner? I mean, the show is going to be in Vegas. It is. It seems odd to announce it this early. I mean, it's September, late September, and the Hall of Fame. I mean, we're talking about April. Long time in advance. I don't know. It's just the timing is kind of weird, but it doesn't surprise me. There was funny memes of Shane McMahon sadly looking on, wondering when's it going to be his chance. I don't know. We'll see how that goes with Shane O'Mac. But that was really kind of the other big news. I guess some stuff announced afterward. Crown Jewel starting to come into shape in Saudi Arabia. Hear any stories about Saudi Arabia lately? Cody Rhodes taking on Seth Rollins in their champion versus champion match, their crown jewel title match. Remember, they do that now every year, so the women will do the same thing. Jey Uso is in concussion protocol following WrestlePalooza. Actually, we'll talk more about that after the break because we have a lot more to talk about, a lot more All Out to talk about in just a few minutes. But yeah, Jey Uso in concussion protocol. And yeah, we'll talk about all the different surprises and why AEW not so family friendly. Wrestling Observer Live coming right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason, filling in for Andrew Zarian this week. Just about, we're going right through hour one of some overall talk about AEW All Out and WrestlePalooza. Hour two, we'll get a little bit more in the weeds with a match-by-match look through and what I liked and what I didn't like and so on. But we're staying going here with, let's just kind of wrap up with the WWE news and then we'll go a little bit more into AEW. So, yeah, Jey Uso in concussion protocol in a spot that I don't know if you could recreate if you tried. Jey Uso during the match with the Usos against Braun Breaker and Bronson Reed. Jey Uso used a chair to hit Braun Breaker, and it bounced off his back, and it hit him in the mouth and split him open, and he's in concussion protocol. And so, which is a requirement. It says, Brian Alvarez says, requirement, any injury like this. So the chairs were used because LA Knight was a special guest referee and so on. So I don't think I've ever seen that happen before, but Jey Uso managed to pull that off. And yeah, it was running through Crown Jewel, starting to come together. We're going to have the first Crown Jewel match is set for next month in Saudi Arabia, Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes, that rivalry renewed. So it's a championship versus champion match for the Crown Jewel Championship, if you can follow along with that. But that was kind of all the big news out of WrestlePalooza. Not a lot of, interesting stuff. We had Pat McAfee back. We had a new intro to the show. So apparently that will be kind of the thing going forward. There was a long ESPN WWE promo video. I believe it was almost 5 minutes that Triple H did narrating over that, talking about the partnership. That's, you know, kind of the underline here. And I was thinking about last night, this partnership really does not matter to anyone outside the United States. I'm sure a lot of, you know, friends in the UK listening to this, France, England, Japan, Mexico, Canada. Shout out to all of you outside Luxembourg, my Luxembourg homies. I'm sure you're here listening to all this and like, we do not give a bleep, right, about ESPN or any of this stuff, what you Americans are talking about. Doesn't affect us at all. We got Netflix in most of the world anyway. And that's how I watched the show last night. I used my VPN and I was able to log on. I'm having issues getting it on my TV though. That's the thing. I can watch it on my laptop, but then when I try to stream it or when I try to use my Wi-Fi router and use my VPN on that, it's still not working. If you have any tips, let me know. Josh at WrestlingObserver.com or on X at Josh Nason or Blue Sky at Josh Nason as well. Whatever social media you use. If you have a trick for how I can watch on my TV, I've tried the streaming. I have a Mac. And Netflix apparently does not allow AirPlay. So if you have tricks with that, I'm an Apple guy and a Netflix guy and a VPN guy, let me know, please. I'd love some help. I did figure out Triller. Actually, I'll talk more about that in hour two and Triller and my AEW Plus experience, thanks to a listener of this very show. But yeah, we have a new intro. And yeah, I as I mentioned, I was kind of keeping track of if there were people complaining. I didn't hear any type of crazy complaint. I haven't read any stories yet. It's very possible I've missed them, but I'll look at them later. But I didn't hear like a huge crush of people not able to get in. However, as been talked about a lot this past week, WWE did a really weird job in promoting how to get this. They said, get it on ESPN, but they never told you that there might be complications because a lot of providers don't have the sync up between ESPN Plus and their cable service yet. They don't have the authorization. And if you don't have it, you have to pay. And they really didn't want to bring that up. And again, this lack of confidence sometimes really is baffling to me, especially a company so hot that they didn't want to say, yeah, you got to pay. You might have to pay for this. And maybe they couldn't figure out an eloquent way to say this. This is two mega companies coming together, multi-billion-dollar companies. And they avoided telling their fans, you might have to pay. You won't have to pay for long, though. This is the things I don't understand. It's like you're trying to avoid something. And that was one of the things that it didn't really hit me until later the week when I was listening to other shows. And they were noticing the same thing. And I hadn't really noticed it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, they don't really want to tell people it could be $30 a month. It's not going to be forever, but it's going to be for now for some people. I think they just wanted people to have figure out on their own. And you think they'd want to kind of rip that Band-Aid off early, but what have you. So the ESPN-WB relationship is kicked off. You know, it's interesting. In listening to this ESPN media call, you know, that was on this past week, and was listening to, again, a lot of the scuttlebutt about this and what have you. ESPN wants subscribers for their service. And WWE always has this perfect timing to find the streaming service that needs the subscribers. And one thing the WWE leadership has said, it's one of their calling cards, Nick Khan has said this, Mark Shapiro is now saying it for TKO, is that they bring their subscribers travel, meaning they were WWE Network subscribers and they just move like a pack. They just go here to here to here. They follow along with us no matter where we go. Now, remember, W Network was a long time ago compared to where we are now. The streaming service where stuff is found everywhere. And you can access stuff is everywhere. But there's this assumption, I think, that they have a million people ready to go, and a million people are just going to follow along subscribers, and it's going to be instant revenue. They're going to stick around and what have you. They found Peacock at the right time, and Peacock paid them a lot of money to bring their stuff over. Now ESPN is doing the same thing with them. It's the smartest thing that these stream providers can do, and I've said this before, find entities that their fans are used to paying to see. Combat sports, combat sports, combat sports. Always, 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 always. It's pay-per-view, and if people are like, I don't have to pay X, or I'm getting paid a lot less, great. I'll still pay you, but it's so much less, so it's better. And now with this, that's a big challenge. And we'll see how things go. On these calls, they didn't want to say what was determined to be a success for them in terms of a number. But it's all the same streaming gobbledygook that we've heard. We have to be all MBAs in training now to be wrestling fans and sports fans. That they want to retain subscribers. They want to give value to existing subscribers. They want to bring a new audience. So I wonder how this is going to work for them. Is this, and one thing that really stuck out to me, and I should have thought about it, but I didn't. Sometimes when it's kind of right in your face, you don't really, you're just like, oh, yeah, yeah. You finally see the trees for the forest or where that saying is, right? You see both of them. Is that ESPN has a lot of sports entities that they have deals with. A lot. And that's a lot of masters to serve. To you and I listening to this right now, wrestling should be one of those big masters. It's one of their big ones, right? I'm not so sure about that. Is it bigger than the NFL? No. They're still in business with the NBA? No. I don't know if they do NHL. I don't think they do NHL anymore. MLB is done after this year, I think, although that could change. College football? No. College basketball? I mean, there's so many of these different entities that they have deals with. WWE, to get that seat at the table, is going to have to kind of like shoulder their way in. Yeah, ESPN is paying a good amount of money for this, but in the grand scheme of things, is it a lot for Disney? Not really. They don't want to upset some of these other partners. So how is this going to work for them? At what point has WWE just become not the apple of their eye? And this is something Mark Shapiro has mentioned about with Netflix is, yeah, of course, the beginning of Star Deal, you're the diamond, you're the shiny new toy. But then as time goes on, he's like 6-7 months down the road, you have to work to still have that be important. And that's going to be a big challenge for a lot of these, is especially in years 2 and 3. When they're kind of in like, this is what it's going to be. That's when you really kind of notice how this really turn out. Because early on, it's great and you figure things out. And this thing came together so quick. There's a lot of stuff that they, both sides, still need to figure out. And what you saw last night and the presentation and the marketing and everything like that, all that is going to change a lot over the next, 4 months, 3-4 months. And I'm sure it's going to change a lot by Crown Jewel as well. So yeah, fascinating times there. But that was pretty much everything with WrestlePalooza. In terms of, the action itself, it was WWE. This is what a WWE fan wants. And you had, of course, there was no pre-show matches. So they said, okay, this is all it's going to be is this show. And I can appreciate that. So they open up with Cena versus Lesnar. And these two had not been in the action. Been at, I believe it was 2015, I believe, was that. It was kind of this weird irony with him and AJ Lee coming back on the same show. But these two hadn't shared the ring since 2015. And it was a short match, which is probably what it should have been. And, I mean, Brock Lesnar just looking, I mean... He's been eating his Wheaties, up there in the Great White North. I mean, he just looked jacked. And again, red face Brock Lesnar. I still cannot get used to long hair Brock Lesnar. It's just a weird thing. You think this tough Viking guy will be growing out his hair, but away we go. And yeah, this was a very short match. And at the end of it, which was, I don't know how actually long this bout was, but this was just, again, F5 after F5 after F5. And Cena just left devastated. and you had and just crushed Lesnar getting the pin. He reunites with Paul Heyman, and you had the crying scene of kids, perfect in the crowd. Tyrese Halliburton for the Indiana Pacers, very forlorn, very sad at ringside. But yeah, this was this is quite a way to start the show, start the experience is the Great American Hero just getting destroyed by Lesnar. And I think part of it is they want Cena to be appreciated on the way out, but they also want to be realistic. Like, it's almost to kind of sublimely tell fans it's time he retires because he can't hang anymore. I think he has, is it 6 appearances left? Maybe 7, but I think it might be 6. And we're on near the end towards his finale in Washington, D.C., of all places, in December. Ugh, disgusting. Not that I hate Washington, D.C., but, I mean, John Cena is a New England guy. He's a West Newbury guy. I drive past the exit to Boston all the time. You're not going to retire at the TD Garden? Come on, man. They put a banner for you up there with the Celtics stuff and the Bruins stuff. Washington, D.C. Gross. Absolutely gross. We had the Usos versus Braun Reed and Bronson Breakker. We talked about that. The Vision once again. Victorious, defeating the reuniting Usos. Very long intro. A lot of lights, a lot of all that. And we talked about the concussion protocol that Jey Uso is in. And then we'll see where LA Knight goes. There's a lot of people speculating LA Knight is going to join the Vision. Again, these factions just keep growing and growing and growing. We talked about Stephanie Valkyrie becoming the new WWE Women's World Champion. The title was vacant, defeating Io Sky. So yeah, this was Valkyrie's coronation. We kind of been leaning towards this. We knew this was going to be inevitable. And we'll see where this title run goes. People are very in her. Fun finish. And then we had, of course, that CM Punk and AJ Lee versus Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. We're going to talk more about that and also the main event a little bit more in our second hour because I'm coming right up near a break. If you're thinking, I'd like to hear more about All Out, that is going to be an hour two as well. I got a whole bunch of notes on that, a whole bunch of news that happened on that show. But we're going to come back with a little bit more. WrestlePalooza, hour two, AEW All Out. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, coming right back after this. Back again, Wrestling Observer Live, Josh Nason for Sunday, September 21st. Quick segment, hour two, almost all AEW All Out. We'll talk more about that in hour two. Let me wrap up WrestlePalooza real quick so we can move on. Yeah, I thought the mixed tag match between Punk and Lee against Seth Rollins Lynch, it was fun. It was long. Again, it was basically just the heels not wanting AJ Lee to get in the ring, kind of just building up that hot tag. And she got in there, and yeah, she looked fine. Again, it didn't really do much for me, but people are super into this, so good for her. And Punk, she ended up winning the match for her team, getting the Black Widow on Becky Lynch. And after this weird clunky spot on the outside, since she got thrown into Punk and Rollins on this one announce table, they crashed through and got back in there and then got the victory. So good for them, and that will lead towards, I would assume, Women's Intercontinental title match coming at Crown Jewel. And eventually, Punk will have to challenge for that world title as well. He could probably make an appearance during that aforementioned Rhodes and Rollins match somewhere, maybe at the end to challenge the winner of that. And then, of course, we had Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre. Cody Rhodes leaving with the title. I talked about that. I thought it was it felt flat. It just felt like after watching all that wrestling in a day, it just felt like, okay, we're done. And it just didn't crackle, didn't have it for me, and Cody Rhodes won, and I think they did a disservice by placing it the way they did. I think the big attraction should have been AJ Lee and CM Punk to send everyone up into the night and just for the night, you know, sacrifice your world title, put it at least on that side, put it a little bit earlier in the show and structure a little bit better. So you really just leave the lasting image as kind of one of your big things. I just didn't think the Cody thing did that. Coming right back after this break, a ton of AEW talk. I promise I'll get to that. We have a whole second hour coming up here on Sports Byline, or if you're listening on WrestlingObserver.com, like in 0.3 seconds. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, come right back after this. And once again, with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode, hour two of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, September 21st. We come to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com. Also, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Shout out, Bailey. All of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM kids, say it with me if you don't know what that is. Ask your parents. Apps like iHeart, TuneIn, everywhere else you get a fine signalless world, you can hear my voice, and for that, I give thanks. I also give thanks and a special shout-out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day. I'll be with you for this second hour, talking all about AEW All Out from Saturday. We had WrestlePalooza talk in the first hour, some AEW All Out talk in the last hour. Hours and hours and hours of wrestling yesterday. I believe it was 9 total hours combined between the two shows. If you watch them, it may be 10. If you watch the post shows, actually longer than that. If you watch more of the pre-shows, I mean, this is a work day and then some for those watching wrestling. But we're going to talk about All Out. We're going to go back to some of the things, some of the notion I talked about earlier. We're going to get a deeper dive in All Out, just like I did with WrestlePalooza. I talked about the disservice, I think, that AEW did in that first, putting the main event against the opening hour of WrestlePalooza. We'll chat about a little bit more about that, kind of the show length itself. We'll talk about family-friendly. Is AEW family-friendly? Tony Khan thinks it is, at least tickets-wise. From the product? Not so sure. Is that a bad thing? I don't know. We'll chat about that. We're going to go in-depth at card. The AEW Women's World title change. All the various surprises news. It's a big week of returns. Where are all these people going to fit on the roster? More of that to come in this second hour. My name is Josh Nason, and Wrestling Observer Live comes right back. Hour two. Stick around. We'll be right back. Back with you, Wrestling Observer Live. Yes. Sunday, September 21st. My name is Josh Nason. Whew. Hour two is kicking off here. Did a lot of talking in hour one. We do more talking in hour two. What did your Saturday look like? What did you do? Like, did you, when it comes to the wrestling, how'd you prepare? Can I tell you how I prepared my day? I'm sure some of you parents out there probably did the same thing. I was up at 6:45. And the reason for that on a Saturday, I'm sure a lot of you people are saying that maybe some people may be saying, oh, it's late. Daughter had a softball game at 8 a.m. at 8U. And I live here in New Hampshire, beautiful state, especially this time of year. And it's balmy 50-ish degrees, I think, at the start of the game. You can see some breath. We got a month plus of games ahead, and fall softball is an experience on Saturday morning. So we did that. It was a couple hours, and then did a little bit of painting in the house. Had to paint the baseboards. Boy, they are very terrible. So I did a little bit of that yesterday. Had a bit of lunch, and then right around 2:30-ish, actually went and saw a house yesterday, potential house you may be interested in buying. And around 2:30 or so yesterday, turned on the tailgate brawl, and I sat down for basically, I don't know, what, 6, 7 hours, 8 hours by the time it was all said and done. Got up, had to stand around, move around a little bit. Boy, what a day. It was a couch day for sure. I love watching sports and football, and Red Sox are in the playoff hunt. But boy, that is a time and a half. We had a lot of writers on the website that live in the Toronto area that went to All Out yesterday. And even they are saying they were quite tired in the building. That's an experience. That's been a topic for a long time, is how long these AEW pay-per-views are. So if you start a flight from California to Boston, actually from Boston to California, it's about six and a half hours. You could have started the tailgate brawl, and by the time you landed, been done with the main event if it was a nonstop flight. That's wild. What a way to spend a flight, right? That's actually kind of a good idea. Maybe that's what Tony's doing for us, the cross-country, the flight crew. But boy, what an all-out yesterday. It was overall, look, it was a notable show. It was a newsworthy show. And that's kind of what you're looking for. Is it worth the time? And I would say, yes, it was. It was worth the time. It was just a crazy day, and a lot of stuff happened, and a lot of stuff that happened in a very long amount of time. So we The show itself, I thought was, it was good. I thought it was long. And I think there are times when you just become desensitized to how, what you're seeing, and you become desensitized to, I'm seeing great wrestling. It's the same thing. You kind of go, you know, week after week after week watching wrestling, and you're seeing all this great stuff and so on. But at some point, it's kind of like, I've seen this. I need something that's a little bit different. And that's that was one of the things I struggled with yesterday. And so I talked in the first segment about some of my issues. I thought the disservice in the main event, which I thought was good, but I think it's going to have to be, for me, a rewatch of that main event to really appreciate it with fresh eyes, a fresh mind. And I wonder, do you think the same thing? Were you watching the whole show out there? And at the end, kind of been just like, oh boy, I'm ready to kind of pack it in. Because again, the outcome I don't think was in doubt, and I think that hurt it as well. But were you ready to be like, okay, we're kind of done with doing this, you know? I mean, maybe somebody out there like, I can't get enough. But I also wonder, you know, do you watch other stuff, or, you know, is wrestling the only thing you watch? I can see both things. So the Tailgate Brawl I was fascinated by because this is the first time they've done this on WBD and TNT. Again, it's part of this kind of this new pay-per-view deal. I wonder if people were irritated that we're used to watching free matches on the Zero Hour, and now they're getting more of a traditional pre-show, kind of a Barker channel show with no matches. I think that was probably annoying to some. I'm sure they were able to find the Tailgate Brawl somehow. But I think this is a smart move for AEW. If they're trying to push pay-per-views and trying to push getting on HBO Max, the only way you're going to see these matches is if you're going to, you got to be a Max subscriber. And this kind of this first thing of you really get Tony Khan and WB saying, look, you got to pay up, right? Not just for pay-per-views, but if you're going to see this, you got to pay to watch it. Sorry. That's the only way you can do that. I wonder if there's irritation among part of the fan base that is less savvy in trying to find this stuff online. If they're annoyed by that, I'm curious. If you are, let me know. Josh@WrestlingObserver.com, Twitter, and Blue Sky at Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. The ops, the tag team version, Samoa Joe and Powerhouse Hobbs being the workhorsemen. We had Danny Garcia being Katsuyori Shibata. And there, I didn't see much of this at all. Excuse me for taking a drink there. But yeah, I didn't see much of that. And they also had the conglomeration. Again, I find it really hard to care about Roderick Strong and Kyle Riley. And Hologram against the Frat House. It's like an ROH match. And then we had the Tornado Tailgate Brawl, which I thought was kind of, I don't know, not really the greatest match. Eight women going at it. And I struggled to get into this. Of course, we had Adam Copeland and Christian Cage against FTR. They had a lot of Canadian acknowledgments from Bubbles of the Trailer Park Boys and a Toronto Maple Leaf star, Wendell Clark. Again, if you're not into hockey, if you're not into a lot of stuff, this really didn't matter to you. Or if you're not a big Trailer Park Boys fan, this is very, very Canadian. And yeah, the story of this match, of course, is Beth Copeland making her debut. This is, again, a fun match. And we were not even close to being done with this at all. First time these two guys have ever, two teams rather, however, squared off. But the big surprise, Beth Copeland, the former Beth Phoenix, making her AEW official debut. Of course, her voice you can hear in the intro of Copeland's music, but they didn't really make a big deal about that. But she's, you know, obviously WWE contract free, has not talked about wrestling, said, you know, never say never thing. But she looks like she could. Looks, again, fantastic shape. Was all kind of done up and everything. Came out to eat even the side. Stokely Hathaway kept interfering. She came out, speared him, took him to the back. And then eventually Copeland and Cage picking up the victory. And then coming back, she came back out to join Christian and Copeland in a celebration. And then Mother Wayne, Nick Wayne, came back out in a wheelchair. Kip Sabian and then FTR attacked Copeland Cage. They had the handcuff thing, and this ended with Beth Phoenix getting a spike pile driver from FTR as Copeland was handcuffed to the ring, handcuffed to the ropes, unable to get back in there. So obviously a huge grudge match between these guys and coming. I wonder, I don't know. Does Christian want to go double dog collar at this thing? They wanted to do the same thing with, you know, the Briscoes did with FTR. We're going to see that. You got to raise the stakes, right? So we'll see what happens here. But this was, entertaining opener. Again, is Beth going to be started part of the show? Is she going to get back into action? Is FTR, I mean, are they going to find some sort of woman to kind of even out their group or something like that? It's kind of what you need. So, I mean, I guess you could do Stokely, but I don't know. Beth Phoenix in the AEW Women's Division could be a lot of fun. I don't know if she wants to do a full-time thing, but her maybe some – I'm really fascinated to see where this goes over the next 4 months. Eddie Kingston against Big Bill. Very kind of weird how Eddie Kingston got back into the mix. I, like most people, thought it was going to be something to do with the Death Riders, kind of a big surprise appearance. I thought it either All In or something. But that hasn't happened. Went up against Big Bill. Picked up the win. Kind of a weird finish at the end here. And Brian Keith attacked afterwards, and out came Hook. So now Hook is aligned with Eddie Kingston. Again, factions, alliances, all these things. This is like this is the thing now, right? I thought Eddie looked just like he did before. I thought it would have been so much bigger had he come out as kind of the whole Death Riders versus AEW angle. And just would have felt more impactful. He's got the history with Gabe Kidd, the history with Jon Moxley. But, second from the pay-per-view coming out here, I'm curious how this came about. If it was a case of just get me back in there no matter what, and perhaps given the options and the timing, that this was the only other option given. When we come back after the break, we'll keep going through WrestlePalooza and some things I liked and didn't like. Coming up, Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, back in a moment. Back with you, Wrestling Observer Live, second hour, talking all about AEW All Out. If you missed anything, talking about WrestlePalooza, some other All Out stuff, that's in the first hour. You get the archives of that on WrestlingObserver.com if you're a subscriber. Actually, these shows actually go up for free. So if you subscribe on our Spotify or our Apple Podcast feed, you can listen to them for free. You can go to just search Wrestling Observer on either feed. And, on your phone and do whatever, you can pick them up there or also on WrestlingObserver.com. The show is free. So let's keep going in All Out. Much more to talk about. One of the quotes that Tony Khan had this week was this family-friendly quote. And this is something that's going to get pushed in his face and put back in his face a lot. And it certainly did last night as I'm having on my Twitter search. You see some of the typical grifters. It's one guy in particular. It's so strange. He is just the grifters and the bad faith actors and people using this family friendly thing against Tony Khan in cases like this. And we'll talk more about this during the Moxley and Darby match. He's talking about family friendly when it comes to ticket pricing and so on. And I'd have to listen to the quote back again. But yeah, it was family friendly when it came to ticket prices. I didn't know if he actually said they have a family friendly product. They definitely don't. This was a good example of this. MJF taking on Mark Briscoe in a table and tax match. This was, very unusual. A lot of blood. It was something where the tax got involved right from the get-go. Briscoe pouring out, thousands and thousands of tax in the ring right before the match even started. So it was a little bit different in that. I like that approach of not building to a tax spot, but basically setting the battlefield ablaze before to even start, if there was a question about that happening. Payne was literally just on the mat, just waiting. MJF had to just get in there and get it started. Any bump, anything like that was going to be felt from the get-go. And I thought that was really smart. This was, both guys, of course, wearing white, as you do if you're going to bleed a lot. And yeah, in terms of memorable moments and so on, there's not really one that sticks out. I think maybe the visual of the tax all in the ring at the onset, but this was just a lot of violence. And at the end of the day, Mark Briscoe picking up the victory over MJF. MJF still holds a contract for an anytime title match and a world title match, which I'm sure is going to be played out later in the year, probably even next year as well. He has to give a week's notice, but he's going to be, I think, gone for a while on his honeymoon. And this just felt like the right thing to do. And I know it's been brought out a lot about on Wrestling Observer Radio about how Mark Briscoe needs to win in this feud, and he got it. And I think I've said this on this podcast before during this year. I think that AEW has their next story if they want it with Mark Briscoe going after the AEW world title. they got to make a big change in how they present him and the commitment level and all that. They could. Would it be as strong as Cody Rhodes? No. But I think there's a sympathetic enough figure where if you really kind of structure right, you can do it. I think they may have lost that over the last 6 months, but perhaps this is a step toward that. Who knows? Anyway, Mark Briscoe picking up the win over MJF, who's going to be written off for a little bit, and we'll come back and you'll be back in the mix. We have the Acclaim gang back together this week, unreluctantly, or very reluctantly. I do not care about that. This led to the dip in the show for me. This is where I think you could cut out an hour easily and have the show end at 7 on the dot, and you still would not leave any fans wanting. Hurt Syndicate versus the Demand, which is a team of Ricochet, Bishop Khan, and Tolu Iommi. This did nothing for me at all. Again, you're following this crazy match, and it's kind of a little bit of a cool down match, but I just don't think you needed this. This didn't need to be on the pay-per-view. You know, you had MVP back in there, but I just, him wrestling, does that feel like something that's essential to see at this point? The Hurt Syndicate, again, really entertaining team, but I don't know. This just didn't do anything for me, and I don't think needed to be on the show. If you look back in retrospect, I think this could have easily been cut. And the next match, I know it's Mercedes Moné. I get it. I think we probably could have cut this too. And I say that because, and I'm sorry to disappoint the sickos. I've been watching AEW from the start. And I'm just going to say I felt this way the entire time. I don't care about Rio. Audible gasps in the audience. I didn't do anything for me. She was the first AEW Women's World Champion. Didn't do anything for me over the past 6 years. The on again, off again, it seems more oft injured in recent years, comes back, disappears, comes back. I don't think there's anything she could do that would get me interested in anything that she's doing. I just don't buy it. I'm not into it. And going in this match, I was just not into it. And the crowd was tired, I think. And maybe they were not into it as well. I'm not going to project my feelings on them. But this was a match, and it had its moments, but even if something like that, I try to be fair. And I think that, you know, going into this, I don't care about Rio, so I'm not going to like this. I never go into this because I'm always open to being surprised. That's the thing. You just kind of be like, you have to set it to the side or else you're not going to enjoy anything. And so I set it to the side. I just had a real tough time getting into this. And, you know, the work was fine, but at the end of the day, Mercedes Moné retained the TBS title. Again, Rio's been back for like 3 weeks and getting a title shot. And I know it's just a match to do, and probably both women wanted it. Mercedes Moné probably more importantly wanted it. But are we going to remember this match? No. No. But again, to be fair, what matches are we really going to remember in this bucket loads that we get every single week? I thought you could cut this hour out, close to an hour out, and maybe shave some other time off. And there's your hour saved. And that would have done way more of a benefit to Fletcher and Paige than what they did. Just saying. And we could have got these matches on Dynamite this week. They didn't announce. I think they have one thing announced. You could have just put these all and made it a Dynamite a little bit bigger on Wednesday. Just saying. Or you could have done split them up over 2 weeks. Coming up next was the Okada, Konosuke Takeshita, and Masakura Tamada match for the AEW Unified title. I like this match so much, I'm going to take another drink of water because this match deserves my whole voice. This was great. This was absolutely great. And it was great because of Takeshita. It was great because of Tamada. I guess, you know, to an extent, Okada as well. He had some funny visuals. He and Takeshita. I did not think for 1 minute that Okada was going to lose, because I think what's going to happen is Takeshita is going to win the Continental Classic, and that's where he's going to defeat Okada for the title. I don't know if that's an original take. I think most people probably expect that, but I think that's exactly what's going to happen. His coronating moment, and that's going to be a split, and his rise into babyface fandom, and he is going to be off and running and then some in 2026. And it's going to be he's the captain now. And I think it makes a lot of sense to slow play this out until the Continental Classic happens. Dorada was really great. He had some stumbles, of course, this past week against Mortos, but those things happen. Surprise, don't happen more. But as I'm watching this, and I put this in our Slack channel as well, if AEW essentially has access to Masa Dorada whenever they want, why they need Hologram? If they have access to Mystico and some of these other CML stars, why do they need Hologram? And why are they going to need Clone, right? I'm watching Dorada do this stuff, and granted, you know, he's at a different level, but he's still super young and all that. You know, I'm seeing this. I'm like, this is like, this is the thing. Like, this is, if you want your luchador, you really want to have something big, the giant circle around this guy. He was so much fun, and the crowd, it was just, they were into this, and everything just absolutely worked. Okada pick up the win at the end of the day over Dorada. Again, this was, he basically stole the pin. There was this great, you know, this, there was a 1-3-way moment. Dorada got dispatched outside the ring. And so Okada and Takeshita could resume their elbows on each other. And Okada just, I mean, they're basically like 3 inches from each other's face. And they kind of just give this look, and Takeshita rolls up his, takes down his elbow pad or rolls it back up. And Okada kind of gives him the side eye, and it's just like, all right. That's when it's just like, okay, this is it. This is the stuff right here. And so I think this leads into a lot of good stuff. And this, they finally have something I'm interested in Okada doing, which is this Takeshita feud. And again, I think it's going to be the Continental Classic. And they're going to have to be in different pools for sure. So it can't be until the finals when they face off. But this is where we're going. And this is a great start to the ride. And yeah, thumbs up for all three guys in this one. Then we go to Jon Moxley versus Darby Allin in a coffin match. This is where the family-friendly aspect of AEW, that quote, gets stabbed like the screwdriver, right? Or a fork in this case. I am not a squeamish person, and I am used to, I can watch wrestling violence and MMA violence way more than I can like a scary movie. I am a chicken bleep and a half when it comes to all that. Can't watch it. I don't like snakes, you know, I don't like rats or spiders. I just, things that I just like freak me out or just like, all set. Pro wrestling violence, I can handle it. This was something else. And I'm coming up the end of the break here, or coming up on the break. So I'm going to save my voice and talk about during the next segment and talk about the term family friendly and what it means here and what it means for the future and what it means for the future of both guys. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Jason coming right back. More All Out talk after this. Wrestling Observer Live for Sunday, September 21st. My name is Josh Nason. Let's keep going. We're at hour two talking about WrestlePalooza. Talking about AEW All Out, and we're talking about All Out now, really kind of through the card here, because we're at the family-friendly match tonight, which is a coffin match, Jon Moxley versus Darby Allin. Wow. Exhale. Right? This was violence and a half. Darby, man, I don't like to clutch my pearls and worry about wrestlers. This is what they want to do. This is what they have to do. This is their livelihood. Who am I to say, don't do this or don't do that? You can hope, please don't die, right? You can hope that. Or if you go to an indie show and you're just like, oh boy, is that the smartest thing to do at this stage in your career? You know, whatever. But at this level, look, people want to do this stuff. This is what they train to do. But man, do I worry about Darby and his future. Holy cannoli, man. I'm going to say light bumps, but he's done crazier stuff than this, but boy, man, do I worry about him. Get to a little bit more why. This was, violent as all hell. And this was, as expected, forks and ears as a callback to, was it Anarchy in the Arena? Oh my God. Was it Forbidden Door? Oh yeah, Forbidden Door, the lights out match. I believe, or it might have been, yeah, that was it. That was it. And this was crazy, bloody, violent, had some interference in it, as you might expect. We had some returns in this. One of those returns being Pac, of all people. Yes, Pac is back in AEW, a short-haired, really bizarre-looking Pac. He looks so strange with the dark hair and the ears. And there's a picture on our website under in the article that I was able to get a screenshot of. It just looks crazy. But yeah, so Pac is back coming out. He returned from an injury. He had hurt himself months and months ago in a match. I remember he kind of like yelled out in pain. He was out more so. It was a foot injury in a match against the Swerve Strickland. He got powerbombed in the corner, and something happened to his leg. And he was out. He's been out most of the year. And they haven't really talked about him. So, yeah, he came back to aid John Moxley and picking up the win. So he is back now in the ever-growing Death Riders group, again, with Daniel Garcia. I wish that Garcia was given a proper intro, like a gang initiation, you know, and maybe that's yet to come. And we'll see. People speculating about Chris Statlander. We'll chat about more about her in just a minute. But yeah, I was kind of hoping for more of an initiation for that. Anyway, Pac is back, and he delivered a razor's edge to Darby Allin on this coffin on the outside of the ring. My God. Darby just hitting this coffin and just like, and he got pinned after that and put in the, he got wrapped in a body bag, and put into, the coffin to give Moxley the victory. Death Rise, I remember months ago being like, oh, this whole thing is going to change, right? The whole thing is, Death Rise going to split or do something. But no, we're still going. Moxley not taking any time off. We're still going. And Pac is back, but yeah, he, picking up the win here. And afterwards, you know, the whole Death Rise crew taking Darby out of the arena. And that led to a, well, someone later in the night where the Death Riders, it's always, again, one of my least favorite things in wrestling is how the cameras are always around and nobody ever mentions it. This is the thing that started in WWE. When cameras just around, people having conversations that they wouldn't normally have in front of a camera. Or stuff happening. So Moxley bids the Death Riders adieu. He starts, you know, giving a promo, talking to the camera. And all of a sudden, Darby pops out of the coffin. And he starts beating Moxley and gets him in his own body bag. And then lights him on fire. Which somebody with an fire extinguisher just happened to be there. Which I never, if you're going to do a stunt, make it explainable why there's someone right there with a fire extinguisher. It just looks like, okay, we're doing this as a stunt for like 2 seconds or whatever. It was just strange. So I don't know if we're leading to a, remember that Kane and Undertaker had the Inferno matches, right? I feel like we're leading something to that, right? Someone's going on fire. I don't know. The escalation between these two is going to continue, but that was all that. Yeah. So the Death Riders win. Pac is back. And, I should mention Bryan Danielson, a funny spot sliding, an AEW bag to Darby. During the match while he was on commentary, and him, Darby pulling out a plastic bag and essentially choking out Moxley, suffocating him with the bag as he had done to Bryan Danielson back at last October's Wrestle Dream. This is the spot that a lot of the grifters are saying at AEW is not family friendly. Tony Khan, not family friendly. I again, he's saying the ticket pricing is family friendly. AEW is, for the most part, it's not. There was a lot of F-bombs on this show, especially right from the get-go, the early stages. And I don't know, man. Like, if you have wrestling and watching with kids, that's hard, man. It's hard. It's hard to justify it, right? Unless you don't care. But, I mean, I wouldn't let my daughter watch this. I don't really like watch wrestling anyway. But, like, this, that's just, I mean, there's 0.0% chance watches. And that's, I guess, okay. Because AEW, the wrestling world has WWE, which is very family-friendly, and they will tell you that they're very family-friendly. It's one of the reasons they're so successful. They're the Disney in the space. This is so much different, right? The TVs, for the most part, I guess, are family-friendly. But, you know, again, those have their moments as well. You look at that the brawl, the one where Tony Storm and Sky Blue were stapling each other all over certain parts of the body. Isn't that family-friendly? Not really. But that's okay. But the family friendly thing, I think, is going to be something that's going to be talked about a lot this week. And a quote maybe potentially taken out of context, but maybe, you know, it's kind of like, maybe you shouldn't have said. We'll go to the AEW Women's World Title match, Toni Storm versus Chris Statlander, Jamie Hayter, and Tekla for AEW Women's title. This is the big surprise of the night. Chris Statlander winning the AEW Women's World title. The way that Toni Storm did her promo this past week on the September to Remember edition of Dynamite/Collision. I remember hearing that and thinking, okay, I don't know if she's winning. There was this heavy indication that she's taking a break or something is happening. And interesting, they went with Chris Statlander in this spot, getting the flash pan at the end. Toni Storm very shocked, surprised. And they really made a point of focusing on her face. Again, it was all kind of done up in this specific kind of makeup and so on. And her going to the back and just shocked at this. I don't know where this is going to lead. I don't know if it's going to lead to her taking time off, which I would fully expect. She's been working like crazy for the past months and months and months. Ends her fourth reign with a title. She's over. She's a made woman. And she doesn't need to have the towel. Can they find other things interesting with her? Yeah, I think they could and they need to. But it's interesting that they went with Statlander here and not Jamie Hayter. Hayter, a former AEW Women's World Champion, and I feel bad for her, but she has never been able to get to that level that she was back before the injury, the first one that kept her out for a better part of a year and a half. She was a champion. She was on top of the women's division and just felt like there was something, the whole presentation. Since she's been back, I don't know if it's the look. I don't know if it's just the time away. Other women wrestlers that just seem bigger, I guess, or just more important. The Monet factor, the Storm factor, I don't know, but she just doesn't have that, I got to see this presence. And there's something that's just different. And maybe that's why she didn't get the nod here. Or maybe it was kind of the achievement award for Statlander. It's been in AEW essentially since day one, at least year one. And it's always been a good worker, well-regarded. They haven't seemed really know what to do with her. They gave her the TBS title win over Jade Cargill before she left, ending her undefeated streak. I think Willow Nightingale should have been that. Is Willow Nightingale going to be the one to take the title from Statlander at some point? Is Statlander going to turn and join the Death Riders? And maybe that kind of works. We'll see. But it was surprise win. I didn't have that meet like, oh, wow, this is great. It just felt like, okay. And I think they need to kind of shuffle the cards a little bit with this women's division. There's a lot of talent here. But as it feels like we're seeing the same 10 women over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Need a little bit of a break. So just a little bit of a surprise. We had the AEW tag team titles on the line in a ladder match, a four-way. We had Brodito, the Young Bucks, the Don Callis family, and Jet Speed. Fine match. Again, coming at the tail end of a very long show, but they did their best. A lot of spots. Brian Danielson getting very frustrated on commentary. Just saying, just go for the belts. Just cope for the belts. This is a lot of violence, and hopefully the guys are okay today. I haven't seen if they're not. But at the end of this, of course, Brodito retaining the titles. Fine tag team champions there, even if the giant question mark Ring of Honor World Championship Bandito has that. But, like, what's the point? But this seems to be, again, a fine team. I'm glad Brody King is finally getting some run here in AEW or an extended run. Very entertaining. And this led to the return of Jack Perry. Looks exactly the same, and he's had some issues with, of course, the Young Bucks and the Elite after everything that happened with his disappearance and so on. It's been kind of the revived BTE kind of saying some notes that he's coming back. And so he went out and he went after both guys. Eventually, you know, the Bucks got the better of him. And they're about to give him the BTE trigger, and he just smiles, and the lights go out, and the video from that had aired when Luchasaurus first came back, but a longer video aired. And it was Jack Perry, the one kind of bringing him back to life after he was killed. Essentially, he was out for a year recovering from complications from double pneumonia in his lungs. And so these two guys took out the Bucks and have reunited. They hugged and their old Jurassic Express music played. And the former AEW tag team champions are back at it again. And this is, again, a lot of returns. We have Pac back. We have these two guys back. I didn't mention Orange Cassidy is coming back. He is going to make his return this Wednesday after being out for about 6 months due to a torn pec. Where are all these guys going to go? Where are these guys going to go? And then we had the world title match, which I've talked about before. And again, I feel bad for both these guys. They're just put in a tough spot. And it was just too much ice cream, right? Too much birthday, too much cake. And he just said then, like, there's just, there wasn't anything more going into the head. And I was watching, I was way more fascinated by the Lesnar and Cena match at this point. So it was just a different canvas, a different lens, a different perspective on things that I'd been watching for almost six straight hours. So we'll see what happens all that. But overall, yeah, all out, a quality show. I'm interested to see what everyone else thought. And of course, you know, what listeners like you thought. Hit me up, Josh Nason. At Twitter and Blue Sky and what else? And of course, email too. Other quick notes here before we go. I'm going to go see the Smashing Machine, the movie. I'm going to go see that on Monday in Boston. I get invited to a screening, so I'm going to go check that out. I interviewed AJ Kirsch this past week. AJ Kirsch, remember him from W Tough Enough? You ever heard of the Savannah Bananas? He is the hype man for their big rival, the Party Animals, and he is part of this big thing. We had a great talk about that, his WWE experiences, why he decided to retire. You can listen to that Josh Nason's Punch Out, available on the Wrestling Observer feeds on Spotify and in Apple Podcasts and our website. When we come back, we're going to wrap this show up. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, coming right back after this. Final segment, Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday, September 21st. My name is Josh Nason. Again, if you missed any of this 2 hours, you can catch it on WrestlingObserver.com for free or on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just search for Wrestling Observer. Let's look ahead at the schedule for the week ahead, as if we didn't have enough. I mean, we had enough wrestling this past weekend for a schedule for like the next 2 weeks. It'd be crazy to explain to people, newer fans, that we did not have this much wrestling in one day, like for decades, right? It's just crazy how much wrestling we have now. Monday, again, I'm going to Boston, Massachusetts to see the Smashing Machine starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. As soon as I know when the embargo is lifted, I'll talk about that movie and my reaction on my podcast, Josh Nason's Punch Out. Raw tomorrow night, the fallout from WrestlePalooza. We have NXT coming Tuesday. The war with TNA is increasing, which I expect is, I think the TV deal is probably done, and TNA is heading to the CW, and that's what this whole thing is going to lead to. We have AEW Dynamite on Wednesday. Of course, the fallout from All Out, not Brawl Out. We have Ring of Honor coming up Thursday, and of course TNA Impact, which I think we're on the road to Victory Road coming up this Friday. I'm sure we'll have a lot of TNA or NXT influence on that show. SmackDown on Friday as well. And then Saturday, we have NXT No Mercy. It's a big NXT week, big TNA week. So again, a lot of crossover between those two groups. We have TNA Collision taping or a live show on Saturday, and then on Sunday, I don't think we have anything. That's very nice. Very nice for all of us. It's been very nice for me to be here. I thank you so much for listening to me for 2 hours talk about pro wrestling, WrestlePalooza, All Out, and I think I got all my hot takes out. More to come in the weeks ahead, including next Sunday. Thanks to everyone at Sports Byline for helping me out, especially producer Bailey. Thanks to all for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, your radio day, your listening day. Thank you for spending the time with me. Once again, this has been Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason. See you next week.